Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today I have Fritz Onion. Fritz is the editor-in-chief at Pluralsight. He's the author of the extraordinary book, EssentialASP.net. He was a columnist for MSDN. He's a regular speaker at major conferences like TechEd and VS Live. Fritz, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me, Jesse.
I'm really pleased to have you here. Pluralsight has gone through the roof. It is making quite a sensation in training.
Yeah, we couldn't be more pleased that our little project from about 4 years ago has gotten to the scale that it's gotten now, and we're to the point where we're releasing over 200 courses a year and getting all the names we'd ever hoped to get, and really feel like we're making a difference. So it's all good.
That sounds great. Now, you were involved from the beginning, is that correct?
I was, yeah. So there are three of us technical folks in the beginning of the company. Aaron Sconard, Keith Brown, and myself. And we just kind of had this weekend meeting at one point and decided that all of our classroom efforts would be even more scalable if we could sort of capture them in video format and share them out to a wider audience. And that kind of was the beginnings of Pluralsight Online.
And my experience is that you have courses all across certainly the .NET spectrum. What's the boundary on what you cover in Pluralsight?
Well, the boundary these days is pretty much anything relevant to developers, to be honest. We certainly are a Microsoft-focused library, or a good portion of ours is Microsoft-focused, and we intend to have complete and comprehensive coverage of the Microsoft development platforms. But in the past year or so, we've really begun expanding into broader developer platforms as well, including Java, a lot of the mobile platforms like Android and iOS, as well as all the client-side technologies, right? All the 500 or whatever client-side JavaScript libraries that have been released this year. And it's, we're finding a lot of good response from people that that maybe found us as a .NET developer and are realizing they need to expand their knowledge into other areas. So our goal is really to become the predominant resource for software developers, no matter what they're doing, around the world.
Okay. What about your particular area of expertise? Is there one area of technology that you tend to focus on yourself?
So my role as editor-in-chief means that I don't get to do a lot of specialization anymore these days. I get to kind of watch the content that other folks are producing, and I have a team of editors that work for me, and we all kind of work with about 150 authors now at producing their courses and coming up with curriculum plans and ideas. The short answer is not really. I don't do a lot of in-depth sort of development day to day anymore. I'm focused more on the high level and curriculum direction of our library.
So you went from being a hands-on developer to editor-in-chief in just a few years.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it unfolded. I do like to get my hands back into coding periodically. So I have a little internal project, an ASP.NET MVC website that I built that tracks a lot of the workflows from my team. And I still take maybe one day a month to build that out and add new features. So keep my hands in a little bit, but I wouldn't trust myself to record a new course on MVC4, for example.
So let's talk a little bit about what Pluralsight is like from the perspective of one of your authors.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, the number of authors has increased dramatically this past year. We have about 100 published authors and probably another 40 to 50 in the pipeline right now. And the process for becoming an author is, first we, depending on the person, if you're like a well-known celebrity like yourself, Jesse, we would just kind of welcome you in the door and then walk you through the process. But a lot of folks will sort of ask for their background, their resume, and any existing works. And then we have a whole video audition process where we ask you to record a short 10-minute segment, much like the content you would be producing for us. And we have a team of reviewers that goes through that and kind of gives you detailed technical feedback until we're satisfied. And then the relationship between us and our authors is very much like that of a book publisher to a book author. We set up individual contracts for each course that is produced. with royalty terms. So it's a royalty-based system, as well as a kind of a completion payment to give you incentive to get it done on time. And that's the author recording on his or her free time in the privacy of their own room. And we sort of get you set up with a good microphone set up and make sure you have the right software to do the recording. But beyond that, we've really strived to keep it very simple and easy to expand our base. That's one of our primary goals, is to make it easy for authors to jump in and start adding their content.
Well, I noticed that you've attracted some really first-rate authors, like, for example, John Papa did a course, and Dan Wallin did a course on Windows 8, and you've had some other really extraordinary, notable folks. It must be difficult to keep that up, though.
We have. It really isn't that difficult to keep it up, to be honest with you. Once we sort of get the snowball of momentum rolling, and we have, you know, these high-profile folks in each of their areas, we really attract a lot of attention. And when authors kind of see all these people creating courses for us, they're much more likely to reach out, or more receptive to us reaching to them. And so, in the beginning, that was definitely the case. It was difficult to convince people that this was a model they should invest their time in. But nowadays, as the contracts are getting more lucrative and folks are doing well, and we're getting some bigger names in the library, it tends to get easier and easier.
So I guess I have to ask you, from an author's perspective, whether the initial wave has passed me by and all the good intro courses have already been built, or do you see a lot more on the horizon?
Yeah, that's a great question. And let me kind of describe how our curriculum is grown, how we sort of plan it out. So mm-hmm. A lot of people have this perspective that we have, slots for, let's say, 500 courses, and it's all planned out, and we just get the authors we want to, or who are willing to record those courses. It's actually much more flexible than that. It's really a combination of three influences that determines what our courses are going to be. So first of all, I personally oversee the library. So I have these general curriculum goals that I have and topic areas that I want to get into. But I don't have detailed concrete ideas in general about a particular topic area, right? So I just know that we want coverage there. And then our second biggest influence is the author himself, right? Whoever comes to us and says, I'm an expert in, ABC, we'll rely on the author to give us their perspective on what they think would be most relevant to developers today, what the most important information is. And then the third influence is we have a user voice forum. If you go to our website, pluralsight.com, and click on the support link at the top, there's a link to the recommended courses that we maintain. And people can vote up course suggestions and what they'd like to see in the library. And I personally review that every week and sort of put that into this whole process as we plan out the next curriculum. So it's kind of a long answer to no. I really don't see any shortage of topic ideas, even potentially really popular ones in the near future. As you know, in this industry, it's every technology is a moving target, and our goal is to stay on top of all of those targets.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago that Silverlight was the brand new hot thing.
Absolutely, yes. You were tightly involved in that, as was I. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it was fun, and it was short.
Fortunately, some of the stuff we learned there was still applicable today. So
yes, and we're busily applying it to WPF and Windows 8. Where are you seeing on the XAML technology? Where are you seeing the most interest?
Well, certainly less so in Silverlight these days. I'll be upfront about that. Definitely a lot of interest in Windows 8. I think a lot of developers who have had either WPF experience or Silverlight experience, or even .NET in general, are just finding that a very natural place to land in the .NET, in the Windows 8 platform. So, coming to it, I think it's less likely for a .NET developer to come to the Windows 8 platform through the HTML5 JavaScript side of it than it is to come in just the straight, C# or VB and XAML side, where they have much more familiarity, many fewer idiosyncrasies than you have in the website. And in the end, it's the same platform, so which route you take doesn't matter that much. But I think Net developers are really finding that appealing, and our XAML courses are doing quite well. They're really attracting a lot of views, and I think that's where most of people's efforts is focusing.
What is happening in Windows 8 these days that you see as new enough that you're going to be looking at courses?
Yeah, so in Windows 8, we kind of have a core set of courses in place already. I think we have about 8 or 9 courses, and we kind of have the intro, and then we have the 3 different core courses that target JavaScript and HTML, and then C, mm-hmm. XAML, and then C++ and XAML. And then we have a few specialized courses in how to do styling, how to do work with a marketplace, how to work with data, how to do connected apps, that kind of stuff. And I think that's where we're going to see much more growth in our library for Windows 8 and a lot more interest. One of the things we found recently is that once we have sort of the fundamental courses in place in our library, one of the most interesting things for our subscribers to see is kind of an end-to-end course that shows you how to apply the technology in a particular application and could sort of put all the pieces together. And we had a couple of those. You mentioned John Papa. He had a very popular course recently on using MVVM and SPA apps and various other technologies. And it was a really nice way to sort of pull all of this together and show you how you can build something really interesting. So I see a lot of opportunity there in Windows 8. It's there's so much new about the interface and the data sharing and the lack of dialogues and things like that to have us build courses that are very pragmatic, very hands-on, here's how to build a course for this type of application are going to be really well received. So we're really starting to look for more content in that area.
Yeah, I ask about that. Obviously, that's an area of deep interest for me. I know that ASP.NET has been expanding and adding MVC and a number of other technologies, and I've had John Galloway on quite a lot, and he has spoken about many of the new technologies that are coming along with ASP.NET, and I notice you already have 28 courses, which is really extraordinary, on ASP.NET. Is that still an emerging area for you?
Well, I wouldn't call it an emerging area. I would call it a carefully tracked area where we have solid plans for maintaining coverage of all the features that are coming out. They have a huge new feature coming out in early next year that's going to make single page application development even easier. So we're tracking that kind of stuff. We're looking at the new features coming up or that just came out in Web Forms 4.5. It looks like we have more than anyone could ever possibly watch in that area. But the way most people approach it is they do the fundamentals courses, they understand how to do standard ASP.NET stuff, and then they'll target an area of ASP.NET that they're going to be working in. So it's become such a big platform that people inevitably end up becoming experts in a subset of it these days, and that's what our courses reflect, is dividing up to master certain areas of it.
Well, I have to tell you, as a C# XAML programmer, I've got my eye on Sean Wildermuth's JavaScript for C# developers as a way to begin to get a little bit more of a handle on JavaScript for Windows 8.
Yeah, that's a great course. It comes at it from the perspective of C#, and it tells you, what some equivalent constructs are, and it tells you what you're going to lose and some things you gain. So it makes it an easy stepping stone to really get your head into that client-side space.
That client-side space is getting confusing, to say the least, when you start seeing courses like single page apps with HTML5, web API, Knockout, and jQuery. I start feeling old and out of touch.
Yeah, that's what I was alluding to earlier when I said all of the JavaScript frameworks that are being released. I was actually at the O'Reilly Fluent conference earlier this year, and it was quite an eye opening experience to be kind of on at an event like that where half of the presentations were about brand new frameworks that one guy had built and decided to put a little effort behind it and open source it and make it available to the world. So it's confusing. A lot of it's confusing about what pieces you should use when and how they fit together. But I think that's just the nature of the beast as it stands today.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the business model of Pluralsight. How do people subscribe, and what are the different kinds of options that they have?
Sure. So we try to keep it really simple and accessible. You get access to the entire library, which right now is about 400 courses, and we're producing on the order of 5 to 10 each week these days, for the entry point of $29 a month. So we tried to price it at a point where just, you know, a developer doing his day job, even if his employer is not willing to pay for it, it looks enticing to really keep your skills up to date and just invest in yourself. So that's the entry point, $29 per month. And then we have an annual plan that, you know, you save 20% if you buy it outright across 12 months. And then we also have a plus plan, both monthly and annual. And the plus just gives you additional features like offline viewing on mobile devices. You can download courses and watch them, you know, when you're on the subway or something, as well as access to assessments. So we have assessments for each course. You can test, take a test before you take the course just to see where you stand before you watch it. And then you can take a test afterwards to see, you know, if you learned what you expected to learn. And all of that gets rolled up into your sort of personal you know, resume on the site. And you can print off certificates once you pass a course with a 70% or better. And there's also access to the offline, the code. So each course has the sample code that the instructor walks through that you can use to walk through yourself. And we give you both a starting point and an end point for each module in the course. And you can walk along with the instructor while they demo things through the video and hopefully end up at the same place that they did. Oh, and sorry, the plus plan is $49 a month and then $4.99 for the annual.
And you also have corporate plans. I know that, for example, my employer, Telerik, has a plan for its employees.
That's right. So anything up to 25 users, you can actually buy as a small business plan on the site, and that's just scaled appropriately. And then if you have more than 25 users, we have a whole sales team that you know, can chat about discount.
They'll be eager to talk with you. I bet. It sounds like you've got all the bases covered, and when I look at your website, it's very easy to navigate, very easy to figure out where the courses are. And how to watch them. If I understand it right, you need the plus in order to watch offline. So if you want to watch on an airplane or whatever, then you need the plus. But if you're willing to watch by web, then you can use the regular. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. So you can just come up to the site for the regular subscription, and you get access to the whole library, but you just can't watch. You can't download it for offline viewing. Mm-hmm. And then you know, it's an easy site to get into. We also have a 1 week free trial, so you can just come in and start watching. Just sign up with a new account. It's limited to 200 minutes of viewing, but you know, it's enough to actually get a full course in if you want to just give it a shot.
That was the free trial?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So did this model evolve over time, or is this how you started out?
Oh, it's evolved quite a bit. I mean, in the beginning, our pricing was much higher. We were really trying to come to grips with the transition from classroom training, which is where we all came from, to this new online model. And our initial instinct was we should charge about the same, right, for someone sitting in a classroom event versus seeing it online. And we didn't get a lot of traction with that approach. It was, you know, there's a lot to be said for going and sitting in a classroom. And, you know, we understand that now and see the online library is something that has a much wider appeal and is much more scalable and can make it, you know, financially more accessible. So once we flipped down to the lower price points, we really started to see some traction.
Tell me a little bit about what's coming with Pluralsight.
Yeah, so we have a lot of exciting plans for the next year. Right now it's December of 2012, and we're beginning our plans for 2013 or in the middle of them. A lot of stuff related to content. So we're actually building out our content team. We're hiring some new editors and looking for new authors. So if any prospective authors are out there, I encourage you to reach out to us at authoring@pluralsight.com. And so we're really looking to ramp up our course development. But some of the significant changes or additions we're going to be making to the website, the first of them is going to be a better tagging system for navigating the content. So today, when you go to the website, we have a list of top-level categories, and within each category, you kind of see the courses, and you can choose which one you want to jump into. what we're going to move toward is a tagging-based system so that each course is tagged with a number of different keywords and then lets you navigate based on keywords. So courses might fall under multiple tags so that you can see them in different places. And then more importantly, we're going to add something called learning paths, which is going to let us provide a sequencing of courses that we recommend. So let's say you're new to web development. You want to become an ASP.NET MVC developer. So we can give you a recommended sequence of courses to take that maybe take you all the way from understanding HTTP and working with HTML to doing advanced topics in MVC programming. And we're going to build out these learning paths. We're going to curate them, make sure they have a logical sequence and fulfill the needs we're looking for. And we're also going to let our customers create their own learning paths. So you can, maybe you have a particular team that's working on a project and everyone on that team needs to know these 10 topics. You can create your own learning path for everyone that joins that team and just have them go through it. And we'll have reporting based on it and lots of other good stuff. And then the other major addition is we're going to add kind of incentives into here, a gamification system, so that when you finish watching a course, you'll get a certain number of points and you'll get awards once you've mastered a content by showing that you can pass the assessments. And so we have lots of ideas there that we're already beginning to work on and are really excited about sort of moving this library to become a real platform for learning and even social interaction.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about social networking. Am I going to be able to tweet as I pass my courses and let people
Absolutely.
Know?
We have some of that there today, so that as you're watching a course, there's a nice little Twitter button and a Google Plus button and a Facebook button that you can just click on and quickly post. But yeah, we're going to deepen our social integration with those other platforms. And one of the things we really see ourselves filling a role in the future is as a place for developers to show their skills and credentials. So we really want to build out the individual profiles of subscribers that have accounts on our site and let them see or let them show the world, look, I've got like a black belt in ASP.NET because I passed all these courses, and I've got, let them also put in things like I passed my MCSD at Microsoft for this technology, and just kind of make it a aggregate, collection of your achievements in the software development world. And that's a place we'd really like to get to, where people are kind of proud of their Pluralsight pages. And that's
so that raises the question about standard testing like the MCSD. Do you have courses that specifically target those certifications?
Yeah, we do not. And this is a tough decision. It was one that we made pretty early on in the library. And in that, one of the things we pride ourselves on in our courses is that we look for people that are practitioners that are using these technologies for building real-world systems, and that's the type of information we like to convey in the courses. And in our experience, that's not always what's being tested in some of the certification courses, and it just adds an extra level of complication if we try to target both what our authors think is important and what is important for the testing. Having said that, while we don't say, you can take these courses to prepare yourself for the certification explicitly, we have a lot of folks that go through a series of courses on our site and use them successfully to pass various certifications. So it's something we don't want to cater to too much, but just want to be part of the learning process in that ecosystem.